Hi there, everyone. This is Myrna James Yu, publisher of Apogeospatial Magazine, and I'm here today speaking with Matthew James Bailey, who is an expert on AI, Internet of Things, sustainable cities, and many other things. And his new book is called Inventing World 3.0, The Evolutionary Ethics for Artificial Intelligence. This is such an important topic, Matthew. I am really, really thrilled to speak with you about it.
It's great to be here, Myrna, and thank you for having me on the show. It's great.
Absolutely. I'd love for you to share initially just a short introduction about your background and, you know, share with us why you're so qualified to talk about this topic.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Hello, everybody. My name is Matthew James Bailey, and I'm one of the international recognized pioneers of the Internet of Things. Most of you have heard that. Smart cities, and most of you probably heard that too. And now moving on to artificial intelligence. For the last 10 years, I've dedicated my life to enable the digital world to have a partnership with our environment and also our humanity in all the vast systems that we currently have. You know, isn't humanity and our human experience becoming more digital? And as the bridge becomes closer and closer between the digital and the human world, we really need to look at things like ethics and transparency of our data, which I'm sure we'll get onto. And so 10 years ago, when I started out in the Internet of Things, I knew very well that AI was coming. That gives us the data to train the mindset of AI. And then smart cities was my focus because of the that's where 55% of the population of the world live in cities and urban jurisdictions. And then on my journey, I've met all sorts of people. I've spent time with people like Professor Stephen Hawking, Sir David Attenborough, Steve Wozniak. I've sat down with prime ministers and cabinet ministers and undersecretaries and all sorts of powerful people around the world and influential people, and discussing about how can we enable the digital world to bring benefit to citizens and to our environment.
I really think that the subject and your expertise, this is one of the most important, if not the most important discussions and topics in technology today. I really, really believe that. Because as you said, the destiny of humanity, it's inevitable that humanity and human issues and artificial intelligence are coming together. You know, tech and humanity are absolutely merging, and it's inevitable. So there has to be this underlying ethics, this underlying code of ethics that the organizations who are moving forward are following. And, you know, this was one of the problems with the documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma, right? That these that wasn't kind of written underlying initially, and things then sort of begin to run amok, right? When tech just runs amok, you get into trouble. Even if initially that's not the intent, happens.
Yes, we're looking at the new maturity model for the digital world. You know, you mentioned the social dilemma, which raises very, very important questions around transparency of our data, how our data is used. Who's using our data and for what purposes? Those kind of ethical questions are really important. If you look at The Coded Bias, which is another movie very similar to The Social Dilemma, which was recently released, that's looking at the unethical quality of facial recognition software, which is now in the US, where facial recognition software, which is primarily AI, misidentifies gender and misidentifies people of a particular culture. You know, there's a project in London that was recently run that misidentified 2,400 people in facial recognition software, primarily people, black males. And that's shocking, because at the end of the day, the digital world must honor our cultures, our belief system, our values in order for it to be welcomed, in order for it to move into the next stage of integration. And what we're looking at really is what is our humanity, what defines us, what are our ethics in maybe a Native American culture? What are our ethics in another culture? What's our ethics in the United States of America? What defines our humanity? And therefore, we have to put our humanity into the digital world.
Because you're talking about honoring diversity in a way and making sure that that is done from the onset.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why the book goes to the very heart of DNA. Inventing World 3.0 is literally a leap in innovation. And it's a democratized narrative. And that's important so that everybody is involved in the conversation. You know, Myrna, I believe that citizens should be involved in the conversation around the future of artificial intelligence. I think they should be very much in the heart of defining what are the important ethics nationally and also locally. Because whilst there may be similarities or even common ground, there'll be subtle nuances that are different between different cultures and different diversities. And the digital world has to understand that. And so
Absolutely.
We have to get to the DNA, Myrna. And to get to the DNA, we have to start off with the data that trains the artificial intelligence algorithms. And that's where data ethics comes in. That's
right.
Our starting place.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love, in the interest of democratizing this conversation in general and the narrative of what we're talking about, I'd love to back up and explain what IoT is and how it's related to AI. And I'll give my rudimentary understanding myself, and then you can clarify. The Internet of Things is really the fact that all of our digital devices are connected via the wireless networks, and that includes things like Nest in your home and Ring as your doorbell and your iPhone and your digital phone connected to the Internet and all of your profiles. And that is the Internet of Things. I'd love you to add to that. And then how that's connected to AI.
Sure. Okay, great. So the Internet of Things is a multi-trillion global phenomenon. And what it does is this. It recognizes that our human and environmental systems, which are vast, right? Our healthcare, how we manage our grids, our transportation systems, whatever it may be, having the digital insight in real time through sensors deployed in locations around our world help us to understand how those systems are performing. And if they're not doing very well, how we can help them to do well. So it's about optimizing and improving the performance of systems. And so the
Internet of Things
is not just it's not just about your home. It's about every aspect of your life.
Right. You know, and I think I was speaking about it from a personal perspective, and you are absolutely expanding it into the global infrastructure and business and utilities and all of that, which is absolutely true as well, of course. Yes.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, please
and
go
so
on.
What's that got to do, so what's that got to do with AI? It has everything to do with AI. So the Internet of Things is about data. It's about collecting data in real time, converting it into information for applications at the end to be able to see what's going on with a particular system, utility, healthcare, transportation, whatever it may be. That data is available to train artificial intelligence. And what that means is that we can now further optimize the performance and the efficiency of our systems, whether they're utilities or whether they're macro, like smart cities, where you have literally hundreds of thousands of services all running in parallel. And so this is really a massive step in the digital transformation of where we started off with the Internet of Things, with all this data that's gathering to increase optimization, but now we have a chance to go even further. But before we do the training of the AI with all that data, Myrna, we have to get our ethics right. Who owns the data? How's it being protected? What's the transparency of the data? All these simple questions we must get right if we're to make our artificial intelligence ethical in its very mindset.
Yes, which means ethical means for humanity, right? I mean, so listen, I first learned about IoT when I launched a magazine with my business partner, Natasha Leger, in 2009 called LBX Journal, LB being location-based, the X being the algebraic variable about how location is used for mostly businesses, but utilities, all everyone, right? Location is now embedded in everything. So at the time, though, it was sort of just happening, and we were learning about IoT. And now in the recent years, it's turning into AI. And also, I'd love to go into a little bit about machine learning, which means that the machine, help me differentiate between AI and machine learning, and then let's circle back to the ethics conversation.
Yeah, sure. So machine learning is a subset of artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence is kind of an umbrella term for many aspects of AI, such as deep learning, that people are familiar with IBM Blue and some other big corporations that we're familiar with. You know, it's deep learning that helped to beat the champion of the ancient game of Go, right? And then we have other aspects like neural linguistic programming, which is the voice interface to artificial intelligence. So your Alexas or your Siris or even your car, when you speak into a digital system, it's AI that's interpreting your voice and putting it into a digital format in order to know what you've requested. Machine learning is another aspect of artificial intelligence, and people around the world are using machine learning. It's one of the parts of AI that's really easy for many people to learn, and so we're looking at democratized innovation around machine learning in particular, because it's really quite simple to kind of get to grips with. And then to start to program your own personalized AI. And Myrna, guess what? Finland, 5.5 million people, they are training 1% of their population, 55,000 persons, on how to program in AI, primarily in machine learning.
Oh, so, my gosh.
Yeah, right. So this is about them leveraging AI and equipping their citizens to be able to invent machine learning and AI for their society, for the benefit of their society. They're bringing citizens into the middle of the innovation of their future. Which other country in the world has ever announced that?
That is amazing. That's really shows their foresight.
Yeah, Scandinavian countries are known as number one in innovation for many, many years. They're very, very good. And there's a wonderful quote by the economic minister, who I can't pronounce his name very well, but he quoted this last year. He said, you know, we don't have enough money to become a leader in AI, but when we know how to program AI, well, that's a different thing. And right. So they're actually not becoming a powerhouse like Canada has a wonderful national strategy. The US have a strategy around AI. India, I think, will become a global hub for innovation and AI. You know, what they're saying is we're going to use this technology, we'll become leaders in programming this, and we're going to benefit our country through insourcing, if you like, from their country, innovation of AI from their citizens. I think it's a wonderful story. How inclusive is that?
And that's really in alignment with your interest in democratizing the whole concept. And by that, I mean making it accessible to everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that it's a simple enough concept. And I understand that your book is really written in a way that it's understandable by everyone, regardless of your education level or technology expertise. And I personally really appreciate that concept. You know, our field of geospatial data and remote sensing has gone through a huge transformation as well in the last maybe 10 years from, you know, only real true experts could use any kind of data from satellites or drones or airplanes. And now it's absolutely accessible to a lot more people, you know, non-experts, because of the way the software has transitioned over the years. And now it's really a fantastic, amazing thing. And incidentally, Norway, to your point about the Scandinavian countries, the Norway Minister of the Environment has just announced about a month ago a program where they're going to pay for the high-res satellite imagery that's needed to monitor the world's forests. And so they have a new program that every NGO in the world can access the high-res data finally to monitor the forests. So that's a really amazing thing. And it's going to be they're going to be able to do it technologically because of this democratization of the software. So it's really, I love this about you. And tell me why is that important to you?
Well, first of all, is that the book, we decided to self-publish the book to guard the narrative. And so the book is really a book of innovation. So we tested the narrative with people who've got OBEs in life sciences, people who've floated businesses on NASDAQ for many billions of dollars, leaders in education, professors, business leaders, but also with the everyday person off the street. We tested it with the elderly, and we also tested it with just everyday people like you and I, because I believe we need to bring citizens into the conversation and the innovation of the future of our data ethics and our data governance. We need to set new certification standards to classify and rank the quality of AI, including its data that's used to train its mindset, to ensure it has ethical alignment and to encourage organizations and innovators to move to the impeccable ethicalness of what AI should be for it to be welcomed in society. And so the book really is a book of innovation. So nations, cities, regions, businesses can use the new data ethics certification maturity model, which is based on some new Alan Turing tests, who you're probably aware is one of the innovators and leaders, one of the founders of AI. It equips people to actually be able to simply rank and certify their quality of data ethics that goes into AI. And then we have a DNA model. Everybody understands DNA, the human helix. And so it's a very simple model to allow people to be able to state what they want in AI, their cultures, their belief systems, their principles, their humanity, believe it or not. So we speak about Aristotle and 11 ethical virtues. I add one more called compassion, based on the COVID-19 challenge, because compassion is obviously very important, and also about AI's purpose. So what we're doing is create a really simple framework with some playbook guidelines on how to start to shape and specify what AI is for you, your family, your business, your nation, or whatever you want AI to be in your life. And we also talk about personalized AI as well. You know, one of the challenges we have at the moment, Myrna, I'm seeing this hot up, right? And this is the next, what I believe, war will be fought over, which is basically ownership of our data in the digital world.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to be, our data's fractured. Our digital self, we have a digital self, which is basically a reflection in all these different systems that have our data, different aspects of our life, how we travel, what financial services we use, what's our gas bill, what's our mortgage. All these different types of data that really are ours are fractured. When we have data governance and data ethics, we can bring that data back into our own ownership, to train our own personalized AI that can be a guide and ensures a sovereignty, Myrna, in the digital world. And that is really important because we've lost our sovereignty in the digital world.
Absolutely,
personalized AI, the new AI data ethics and new AI ethics frameworks enable us to have our sovereignty. Because, Myrna, if we don't have our sovereignty first, then we're going to completely lose any chance of having sovereignty in the digital world.
And that means, I think that even translates into personal sovereignty in our lives, right? If we lose control of our own, every aspect of information about ourselves, and it's just out there and out of control, and we lose that, that's a huge piece of our entire lives, right? Yeah, the sovereignty piece is so important. We should have the right as individual humans to control our own lives, right? To control who sees what about us and what's happening. These data privacy issues, we certainly saw those coming as well when we started LB External, you know, however many years ago that was. Definitely. When you say creating a DNA model for AI, what does that mean that each individual will have their own ability to have control of that? I mean, say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So the reason why we use the human DNA model is for a couple of reasons. One is DNA is the foundation of, or one of the foundational blocks of evolution, and most people talk about that. And we're talking about evolutionary ethics. We're talking about evolving AI with citizen participation and democratic and ethical values. So it's a good model. And so the different types of acids that form a base pair, right, give us blue eyes or give us two ears or give us an organ like a liver or give us lungs or give us fingers, right? The DNA base pairs determine the organic shape. Well, why can't we use the same principle for shaping AI? One that's ethical, one that understands our humanity, one that works with us to create a partnership with the environment, one that honors our cultures, whether personal or whether they're religious, or whether they're a different type of culture that may be ancient or modern. You know, so going to the base pairs of shaping AI makes sense, because what we're doing is we're forming a digital self of AI that has those principles within its mindset. It's evolving based on those principles. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. And it makes me think, do you have a consulting company that can help people, help companies do that when they're forming, or how do they do that?
Yes, great. Thank you for asking that. That's a good pitch. So AI
I didn't mean to make it a pitch, right? That's where my brain went. I'm like, well, then how do we do that?
Yes, so people can go to AIethics.world. And we run courses in data ethics and also in this new DNA model. And also they can have personal consulting from me and my network to help them to formulate their data ethic governance, their AI ethic governance, and to work with them on these new types of DNA principles. And it's important, isn't it? Because I believe that citizens are the ones that are going to benefit from this and the planet. So why wouldn't we bring citizens into the innovation process? Doesn't that just make sense?
Absolutely. And let's talk then about the environment and the Earth and the planet, because this is so important as well, right? It's a whole nother component. It's a whole nother way that it's a whole nother benefit for what you're talking about, is the benefit to the planet. And to the health of the planet, right? And to environmentalism. And, you know, my theory, what I've seen is that there are big, huge sections of the planet. You know, I just returned from 2 weeks in Panama, and I was literally in the jungle for a week. And there are places around the world, you know, that are literally dead, right? The soil is dead. The land is dead. They've been deforested or whatever. And we have to bring those sections of the earth, literally the dirt and the earth in that place, back to life, you know? This organization in Panama, GeoVersity, has done that. They've planted over 500,000 trees on their nature preserve, which is 12,500 acres in Panama. Mm. And, you know, this is what needs to happen all over the world. So help us understand how that will also be a benefit of your work.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the book talks about environmental AI, i.e. AI dedicated to the environment. And it goes much further than anybody else has done yet in the human existence. And this is what it does. We have the Paris Climate Accord, right, where most countries are involved, I think nearly everybody, and they're honorable agreements, right, to reduce our carbon emissions, to find a symbiotic partnership with our environment, okay? And you're obviously aware of the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals, which address all sorts of different issues from human living, but also with the environment. And what cities are where most of us live, right? 55% of the people in the world that live in and around cities, and that's going to increase to 70% potentially by 2050. Mm-hmm. So having AI deployed within our transportation systems, our grid, our homes, our buildings, every aspect of society that has a principle to reduce carbon emissions, then what we have is many systems all working in harmony, dedicated to reduce carbon emissions. Now, how would that make a difference in achieving a harmony with the planet, right, and a symbiotic relationship? So the book reveals on how to invent AI very simply that can scale across city systems in every aspect of those digital systems dedicated to achieve certain environmental mandates, working in harmony and collaboration, which has never been possible before, but then scale across regions and then entire nations, and maybe even further into continents. Just imagine if every single digital system in the United States of America had the mandate to try and reduce carbon emissions and all cooperating together with intelligence purpose to reduce our carbon emissions. How much difference would that make to our partnership with the environment, Myrna?
And I'm hearing the word platform. Are we talking about, you know, all these IoT sensors out there? You know, what I think one of the things we're still missing is a huge repository of all the data about the Earth in one place, so we can all talk to each other. We can see all the information. There's so many organizations reinventing the wheel, right? Incredible research universities, and you know, it's there's so much, but they aren't able to talk to each other really, or like, you know, I mean, to bring all that data together. Long time ago, I was in Beijing and talking to one of the founders of Keyhole, which became Google Earth when Google bought them. I was talking to Michael Jones about this, and I kept saying, there has to be a repository for all the data about the Earth so we can basically all get on the same page, to oversimplify, right? So are you talking about that?
Indirectly and not, and directly. So indirectly, what I think you're proposing is, how do we create a data lake with key environmental information that's rich in information, in history, and also rich in different dimensional aspects of the environment and what not to do and what to do and its current condition, right? So having that data lake of environmental data is imperative, and it has to be secure, because that's where we can train AI, right, that may be dedicated to a particular aspect of environmental harmony or environmental management, to then be deployed, if you like, exported, sent out as a citizen into the systems in society, knowing how to and dedicated to achieve a particular environmental goal. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that could be done by geographic region.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
For some reason, it will be under pressure from water shortage. So the environmental data lake, or the environment kind of a big data vault you're talking about, could focus on basically how to deal with regions or cities that have problems with water security. Others may be around fire. Others may be around a flood damage or coastal erosion. Or, you know, or tornadoes. It doesn't really matter. But what you're creating is a country of data, like a university of data, that is able for us to train AI to then graduate, to go into society dedicated to that particular environmental task.
Right. That's really amazing. I mean, the potential is just really significant. I know that E.O. Wilson says that we need to have 50% of the land mass of the Earth, you know, as a preserve, as nature preserved as much as possible, in order to kind of get out of this debacle that we're in right now. And you know, there's the tie too. There's the tie to human health and humanity's well-being to the health of the Earth that I think, you know, just wasn't really talked about or recognized even 10 years ago. And now that tie is becoming more and more obvious. So I think that's another component here, another benefit of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and, you know, lineages, ancient lineages from thousands of years ago always honored the environment because they reckoned that was good for our mental health. It was good for our health, as you're talking about. What they recognized was a symbiotic partnership with the environment was imperative to the human existence. And the purpose of the human existence, whether people believe it or not who are listening, is actually for us to be in harmony with the environment. We're co-symbiotic, you know, we're together. So I think we're rediscovering the traditions. And look, Myrna, we need to cut to the chase. The fact is this, we're at a tipping point with our environment. We have 7.8 billion people on the planet at the moment. Unless we have increased optimization of our and performance of our services unless we can actually bring AI to help with the strain of the human-centric systems and the limited resources, both financially and also environmental, we have, we're going to head to disaster. AI is not a savior of mankind. It's a guide that says, hey, guys, I can help here, and I can help you to move beyond these challenges. And so we have to, I believe, bring AI central into the human story. But, Myrna, we have to do it ethically, thoughtfully, and mindfully. You know, Myrna, if you're a citizen from the future, say 50 or 100 years back, and you're looking back at how AI is being developed at the moment, the majority of it and the big investment is coming into social media. How does that help our environment? How does that do?
That's absurd. That's an absurd statement, right? It's an absurd statement to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, humanity is being invited to grow up. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, you know, what's our destiny? What's the legacy we're going to leave for our children and their children? Are we going to leave the same foundational challenges that we have now, where our understanding of what's important is actually twisted? Are we going to actually evolve beyond into a new maturity to understand that actually things like a good environment, things like good equality and equity in society, is not just good for the individuals and groups, it's good for humanity as a whole. It allows
every individual,
absolutely,
not just the wealthy, not just the people who have access, not just, you know, a certain population, but everyone is what you're saying as well.
Yeah, I would say, well, who's more important than anybody else? We're all equal, aren't we? And so,
absolutely.
Yes, of course. It is about equality, and it is about equity, and it is about individuality. So this is where I believe we're going to go, is that personalized AI, once we get our data governance right, will allow people, I believe, to be more at rest, because the digital world where we're looking at our phones or we're trying to organize our lives or we're looking at emails or social media or whatever we're trying to do, right, it puts us at rest because it takes care of that for you based on your desires, based on your mandates, based on your principles that you want for your life, how you want to grow. So I believe that personalized AI will put more of humanity at rest and then give us more time and freedom to explore our gifts, to be able to learn a new skill set, to spend more time with our family, to actually grow and evolve. So this is where I believe that AI can go into one reality where it actually becomes a liberator into with the human experience rather than an inhibitor in which it's operating in the majority of
our
today.
Wow. Giving us some freedom, right? Freedom to our lives as opposed to feeling more burdened by, oh, I've got to go to work, and so many people go to work to jobs they don't even enjoy. So you're talking about a liberation to an extent, right?
Yes, I am. And this will disrupt, this is a whole disruption paradigm. And that's good because we need disruption, quite frankly.
Your timing is perfect on that one, right?
Well, thank you.
What's happening.
It's been, I planned the book 10 years ago and then basically the last 12 months writing it and self-publishing. It's been a tough, and it's 400 pages of a guide. It goes to profound depth of what our humanity is and how to actually put our humanity and other environmental principles into AI in an understand narrative. So we are entering a time of disruption, and we have to kind of look at the human experience differently, I believe. It's like, I'm taking a job because I need this amount of money for my family. Okay, well, what happens if AI says, what are your gifts? Let's look at your gifts. You enjoy you're exploring your gifts, whether it's an artist or a creator of content or whether it's a CEO, it doesn't really matter. And so if AI can actually help us to find the right job that matches our personal culture and also extends our gifts to be able to be more in joy in what we're doing in serving our businesses and also being part of a national collective, then isn't that good for everybody? Isn't it
Absolutely.
Good if it's going to be more in joy? I mean, that's purely that's the purpose of the human experience is to be in joy.
Well, and the more people that feel that way about their lives, the more underlying contentment there is, right? And therefore, less conflict because there's less stress and there's less, you know what I mean, on an individual basis, which does affect the collective.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it all starts with us. And so have you ever seen those YouTube videos where if you put music to water that's freezing, if you put kind of really aggressive music, the water forms horrible patterns. But if you put classical music or really cool music, the water forms beautiful geometry, right?
It's energy. It's all about energy and frequency.
Right. So the question is this. If AI puts us more at rest, what will be the geometry within the 70% of the water that's within our bodies?
Oh, my God. That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You're addressing all the world's biggest problems from a one person at a time standpoint, which is phenomenal, where each person can benefit even, right? It's amazing.
It's all about everybody benefiting. This is not about victim or perpetrator. This really is about us coming together with a mature understanding of how we can do better together. Better together in our different belief systems and cultures, but also for how we can get on better for, and provide a foundation for the future. Now, Myrna, this is not about utopia because the universal law of change, right? Everything changes. So this is not about utopia. This is about us getting to a place where we can literally be able to experience our humanity in a way we've never experienced before. And I think that's an interesting thought.
And you're talking about evolution of DNA and evolutionary ethics and all of this, and it's also very much a spiritual evolution, right? It's a recognition that we need to be better. We all need to, we can get into the living in the moment right now and then creating this, complete contentment and understanding of what the world's really about. I mean, you're in a way, you're providing a framework for that.
It is. And
a pathway.
Right. So I don't deliberately, there are, for people that are attentive in the book, they'll see the message, but it's not overt at the moment. But it's not about, if I can just examine some of the languages, it's about us striving to be better. It's allowing us to be at rest and allowing ourselves to become better from our sovereignty. So this is not a forcing paradigm. This is an allowing and becoming paradigm. So our systems can breathe, our transportation systems can go, take a breath now. Or our emergency response or our healthcare systems can say, right, I'm at rest now. It's about putting our systems, which means ourselves, the humans, all of us together, more at rest. And so just imagine, just for a moment, if for 1 second, if all of humanity was at rest for the same second, would that make a difference? I don't know, but it could be interesting.
It brings an ease to life, right? It brings an element of ease and again, less stress and therefore less cortisol in our bodies and less, less of the things that cause the problems in our health even, right?
Well, that's exactly right. Well-being, mental well-being and environmental zip code is linked to our health, and most people understand that. And so, the question to ask is, what's the legacy that people want to leave behind? What do you want people to write about you? And how important is that to you? Is it about a bank account that has got billions of dollars but is not creating for society and for your fellow citizens? Or is it about, creating a foundation where to enable people to be able to create a future they desire? I think the latter is far more interesting than the former. But the book actually, once done, this will actually increase our global GDP, I believe, anywhere between 10 to 50%, if not more, because it will change everything. And so as we bring AI into to do a lot more heavy lifting in society, then we're looking at literally different ways that the systems operate. Costs are reduced because efficiency is increasing. The humanity is we're having a change in jobs because we're having to advance in from traditional jobs. There's a huge opportunity for advancement here. So this is not just about kind of how do we bring, restore balance back to our world, both in our human living and our environment. But it's also about GDP. And I sincerely believe, and I'm happy to debate anybody, that or talk it over with anybody listening to your show, that I believe this will stimulate economic GDP between 10 to 50%, which is a huge amount. So it's also about us doing financially well. When our economy is financially well, then we have an opportunity to look at universal basic income and making sure that no one's homeless, ensuring that everybody can get a paid education. Just those basic rights are really important.
It's about doing the right thing, right? And when you do the right thing, then those benefits fall into place. Not easily, but they do. They do ultimately.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I've never had the privilege of giving birth because I'm male. But when you give, obviously, from what my limited understanding, when there has to be, it's a very traumatic experience of both baby and mother, right? And there's a place of surrender where the final element of the and the final part of the birth actually is able to complete itself. And I believe we're in that place. I believe that with the digital world, we're in this deep, deep pain and giving birth to something new. And I believe it's an opportunity for humanity to surrender and say, you know, we can do better, so let's do better, shall we?
That's really a fantastic analogy. And I just can't thank you enough for talking about this. I think I'm going to try to articulate the urgency here. We are at a tipping point for many, many things in our world right now, you know, from human health to the environment, to each of us as individuals, you know, having a life that we love and that we really enjoy every moment of, and we're at this tipping point. So, and AI can help because, as you said, my way of summarizing that is that, you know, it will exponentially increase the ability of moving forward with how technology can help with all these processes. And your point is, we cannot let that keep moving forward without a foundation of ethics to guide it, right?
Yes, that's beautiful. Thank you.
I'd love to see if there's anything, any final words you'd like to share. I'm so excited to have had this conversation.
Well, thank you very much, Myrna. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, people can buy the book Inventing World 3.0 on Apple or Kindle. You can get a special edition, a signed copy from me, colorful edition from AIethics.world. And we're about to put a black and white version onto Amazon that is really quite affordable for people. So my view is this, is that have a think about how you want the digital world to serve you, your family, to help you in your business, to help you in your life. How do you want AI to operate in your nations? And think about what your belief system and your values are and your culture and how you want the digital world to honor those and how you want AI to honor your sovereignty. Those are some of the thoughts that I will leave, Myrna, if that's okay.
Thank you so much. I mean, we are going in this direction, and we need to be mindful about it, right?
Absolutely. It's all about mindfulness, isn't it?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Matthew. We will speak again very soon.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes, it's November 18th, 2020, and we'll talk again soon. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Are we still recording? Hello? Nope. Yeah, I think we finished.